You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler.
Volume 2, The National Socialist Movement. Today Germany is not a world power. Even if we could overcome our present military weakness, we could still not claim this title anymore. How much importance could there be in a structure on this planet that has such a pitiful proportion between its population and the available area as the present German Reich? In an age when the earth is gradually being divided among nations, many of which are so large they almost span entire continents, it is not possible to speak in terms of a world power when our political motherland is restricted to the ridiculous area of hardly 500,000 square kilometers.
193,000 square miles, slightly larger than California.
From a purely territorial point of view, the area of the German Reich absolutely disappears when compared to that of the so-called world powers. England does not prove the statement to be incorrect, because the British mother country is really nothing but the gigantic capital of the British world empire, which possesses almost one-fourth of the entire globe. There are other gigantic states like the American Union, Russia and China. Some of these countries are 10 times the size of our present German Reich. Even France has to be included in these states. Not only does she constantly increase and replenish her army out of the Negroid livestock from her enormous empire, but also from a racial viewpoint, her infiltration with Negro blood is increasing so rapidly that we could call it the creation of an African state on European soil. The present colonial policy of France cannot be compared with the Germany of the past. If the present development of France continues for another 300 years, the last bit of French blood will sink into the European African half-breed state, a mulatto state, that is now being formed. It is a huge, continuous settlement from the Rhine to the Congo, and will be populated by a lower race that has been gradually created by continuous bastardization. This was the difference between the French and the old German colonial policy. The former German colonial policy was a half-hearted effort at best, just as was everything we did. It did not try to enlarge the territory for settlement by the German race, or try to increase the power of the Reich through the use of black blood, which would have been a criminal act in itself. The African Askari of German East Africa represented a small, hesitant step in that direction. However, they were only used to defend the colony. No one had ever considered using black soldiers on a European battlefield. Of course, realistically, it was impossible during the World War, and it never came up as an option during more favourable times. In contrast, the French saw the recruitment of black blood as another reason for their colonial activity. So today, we find a number of powers on the earth who have a considerably larger population than Germany, and who have greater political support for their powerful positions. When we compare the area and population ratio of the German Reich with other rising world powers, Germany has never seen such unfavorable conditions, not since the beginning of our history 2,000 years ago, not until today. At that time, we were a young, bold nation entering a world of large political structures that were already crumbling, and we helped to dispose of one of the last giants, Rome. Today we find ourselves in a world where large power states are again developing, while our own Reich gradually sinks deeper and deeper into insignificance. It is necessary for us to coldly and calmly keep this bitter truth in our mind. It is necessary for us to study and compare the area and population of the German Empire throughout the centuries with that of other states. I am convinced that everyone will come to the same alarming conclusion that I have already pointed out. Germany is no longer a world power, regardless of whether she is strong or weak in the military sense. We are no longer in proportion when compared to other great states of the world. That is thanks to the disastrous leadership of our nation in matters of foreign policy, thanks to the absolute lack of a clearly defined foreign policy, and thanks to the loss of all natural instincts and loss of the desire for self-preservation. If the National Socialist movement wants to shine brightly in history and show it is ordained to pursue a great mission for our people, it must fully recognize and feel deep pain over their situation on this earth. It must take up the fight with courage and purpose against the aimlessness and ineptitude that has guided our foreign policy. Without regard to tradition or bad past experiences, it must find the courage to organize our people and unite their strength in a march forward on the road that will lead our people out of their present narrow living area to new territory and new soil. We must liberate them forever from the danger of perishing from the face of this earth, and we must not allow them to serve others as slaves. Our nationalist socialist movement must attempt to remove the mismatch between our population and the size of our territory, the inequality between our historic past and our present weakness. Our land must be seen as the source of survival and the pivotal point of political power. In doing so, the movement must always keep in mind that we are ambassadors of the highest level of humanity on this earth and are bound by a solemn duty. We can meet these requirements if we work to make the German people race-conscious, so they not only breed dogs, horses, and cats carefully, but they show mercy toward their own blood. When I called the former German foreign policy aimless and inept, the proof of that statement lies in the actual failure of this policy. If our people had been intellectually inferior or cowardly, the results of their struggle on earth could not have been worse than what we see today. The developments of the last decades before the war must not mislead us on this issue. You cannot measure the strength of an empire by comparing that empire to itself. Instead, you must compare it to other states. This comparison furnishes the proof that not only have other states steadily increased in power, but they have ultimately become more powerful. In spite of any apparent rise in German power, the road that Germany traveled actually led farther and farther away from the other states. Eventually, she was left far behind, and the increasing difference was not in our favor. We fell more and more behind. Even in our population, we continue to fall behind. Our nation is certainly not surpassed by any other people on earth when it comes to heroic courage. Considering everything, our people have sacrificed more of their own blood to secure their existence than any other people on earth. Our failure can only be blamed on the way that courage was used. If we examine the political experiences of our people during the last 1,000 or more years, review all the countless wars and battles that have passed before our eyes, and examine the final results, we must confess that out of this sea of blood, only three phenomena have appeared that we might identify as the lasting fruits of a foreign policy. The colonization of the Ostmark, which was accomplished mainly by the Bavarians of old, the conquest and the push into the territory east of the Elbe, the organization of the Brandenburg-Prussian state by the Hohenzollerns, which was a model as a nucleus and the crystallization of a new empire. This illustrates something that we should take as a warning for the future. The first two great successes of our foreign policy have become the most long-lasting. Without them, our people would not play any part in the world today. They represent the first and unfortunately the only successful attempt to match the increasing population with the available territory and soil quality. It is a tragedy that our German historians have never appreciated these two facts, because they represent the greatest importance to future generations. Instead, historians glorified everything else under the sun, including fantastic heroism, and praised the adventures of many battles and wars, rather than recognize the insignificance most of these events had when we look at the vast development of the nation. The third great political success was the formation of the Prussian state. Through it, a special idea of state was cultivated, and the modern spirit of self-preservation was grown through the German army. This Prussian state and its newly formed ideas about how a state should operate did away with the belief that individual provinces should defend themselves and required the formation of a national defense force. It is impossible to overemphasize the importance of this event. Even with the excessive bleeding of Germany caused from being torn by the extreme trend toward individualism of states, which caused the German people to rot, the discipline that was established by the Prussian army allowed Germany to at least recover part of the long-lost ability to organize the province states. Other nations may still have a primitive need to group together in a flock, but our nation regained its structure as a result of the process of military training, which was a great accomplishment, even if it was in part artificial and not a natural process. The termination of required military service may not be important to dozens of other nations, but was of vital significance to us. If it had not been for the educational influence of military training, 10 generations would have been delivered over to the evil effects of their disunity, to vice, and a corrupt world view. They would have been without the ability to correct themselves, and then our nation would have lost the last remaining passion for independent existence on this planet. The German spirit would then have made its contributions to civilization only in the shadow of foreign nations, without anyone knowing where such contributions originated. We would have become nothing more than a cultural fertilizer until the remaining of Aryan Nordic blood in us was finally spoiled or wiped out. It is important to note that the significance of these real political successes, which our people gained in their battles over a period of more than 1,000 years, are recognized and appreciated more by our opponents than by us. Even today we rave about a heroism that robbed our nation of millions of its most noble members, and, in the end, accomplished nothing. It is very important for our present and future that we learn the difference between the real political successes of our nation and the events where the spilling of national blood gained us nothing. We National Socialists must never, ever become involved in the empty, cheering patriotism that is common in the privileged class world. It is deadly dangerous to believe the last developments before the war will in any way guide our own course. The entire historical period of the 19th century does not contain a single undertaking that we would be justified in pursuing today. In contrast to the behavior of representatives of that time, we must make the only goal of all foreign policy once again the expansion of land so that it matches the population. Yes, we can see from the past that we must have two aims for our political actions. Obtaining new land and soil must be the aim of our foreign policy, and the aim of our domestic policy must be the formation of a new, ideologically solid foundation for the interior of the country. I would like to briefly explain my position on whether the demand for territory and soil appears to be ethically and morally justified. As terrible as it is to have to justify this argument, it is necessary, since even the so-called race-conscious circles, all kinds of suave but insincere speakers appear who try to tell the German people the injustice of 1918 is the justification for their foreign policy, and they only want to recover what was lost. But then they turn around and assure the rest of the world that they only want racial brotherhood and sympathy. Let me anticipate objections and propose the following idea. To demand the frontiers of 1914 to be restored is political foolishness, which is so severe it appears criminal. This idea does not consider the fact that the Reich's old borders were not drawn logically. In reality, the old borders were incomplete because they did not include all Germans, and they were certainly unreasonable when we consider the military value of the geography. Those borders did not result from a carefully considered political plan, but were drawn at the spur of the moment during a political struggle that is still not over, and some were even drawn by random chance. It would be equally right, and in many cases more just, to randomly select any other year in German history and reconstruct conditions from that time, and use that to justify our foreign policy goals. This would make our privileged class world happy. They do not possess a single constructive political idea for the future. They only live in the past. Actually, they live only in their own recent past because they cannot see beyond their own lifetime. Inertia compels them to continue along their current path and makes them resist any change, which explains why they never go any faster in their opposition. It is therefore obvious the political horizon of these people does not reach beyond the borderlines of 1914. When they proclaim they want those borders restored, they again repair the crumbling alliance of our opponents. That is the only thing that explains why the alliance of the victors is able to maintain itself intact even 8 years after a world struggle in which nations with the most diverse desires and goals came together to take part. All these nations profited by Germany's collapse. Their fear of our strength pushed the greed and the envy that existed between them into the background. They saw the complete dismemberment of our Reich's heritage as the best protection against any future uprising. Their troubled conscience and their fear of the strength of our people has proven to be the most durable cement for keeping the members of this coalition together. We did not disappoint them when our privileged class world set up a political program for Germany that restored the boundaries of 1914. Everyone in the alliance of enemies who might think of pulling out has to jump back in as a partner because he fears that if he withdraws, he will be isolated and the others may turn on him. Then he would no longer have the protection of the individual allies, so he merrily goes back to the alliance. Every single nation feels threatened and intimidated by this privileged class slogan. At the same time, their plan is doubly foolish. First, because they lack the strength to move their idea from the haze of nightclubs into reality. And second, even if it could happen, the result would be so pitiful that, by God, it would not be worth the bloodshed of our people again. It is unquestionable that the restoration of the borders of 1914 could only be accomplished by bloodshed. Only someone with a childlike, naive spirit would think the Versailles Treaty could be changed by a plot or by begging for handouts. Such an attempt would require the character of a Talleyrand, and we do not have a Talleyrand on our side. Half of our politicians are shrewd individuals lacking any character, and who are hostile to our people. The other half are kind, harmless, and agreeable morons. Furthermore, times have changed since the Congress of Vienna. Princes and princely mistresses no longer bargain and haggle about borderlines of states. Now, the relentless world Jew fights for domination over the people. No nation can remove this fist clutching at its throat except by the sword. Only the united strength of a powerfully concentrated national passion can rebel against this international enslavement of the nations. However, such a process is and remains a bloody one. However, if we have a strong conviction that the future of Germany requires the greatest risk, no matter what the outcome may be, then we must choose a goal regardless of political considerations, and devote ourselves completely to a struggle that is worthy of our sacrifice. The frontiers of 1914 mean nothing to Germany's future. They offered no protection in the past, and they would give us no strength in the future. they will not provide the German people with unity, and they will not meet our food requirements. The military value of the old frontiers are not practical or satisfactory either. They certainly will not improve our present standing among other world powers, or rather our standing with the real world powers. The distance to England is not shortened. The vastness of American Union is not reached, and France would not experience a substantial decrease in her world political importance. One thing, however, would be certain. Even if we were successful, any attempt to restore the borderlines of 1914 would lead to further bloodshed for our people. But this time, it would be to such an extent that no one would be left to make decisions and plan actions necessary to guarantee the life and the future of the nation. The alternative would be that once Germany was intoxicated by such an easy success, any further goals would be rejected since the national honour was already restored, and, at least for the moment, all attention would focus on the few doors which would open for commercial progress. In contrast to all this, we as National Socialists must hold tightly to our goals in foreign policy. We must secure the territory and soil that is due for the German people for their place on this earth. This action is the only one that could justify bloodshed in the eyes of God and of future German generations. It would be justified before God because we are placed on this world to eternally struggle for our daily bread. We are beings who are given nothing and who owe their position as lords of the earth to the ingenuity and to the courage that they used to fight for and preserve their position. This sacrifice would be justified in the eyes of future German generations because they will know we did not shed the blood of one single citizen without the gift of 1,000 others to the future. The securing of territory and soil will justify the risk of the farmers' sons of today for the future sons of Germany. Even though statesmen may be persecuted for their decisions today, someday in the future, the responsible statesman will be absolved of all bloodshed and of all guilt for those sacrificed. I must sharply oppose those racialist writers who pretend to think that taking land like this is somehow a breach of sacred human rights, and who oppose it through their penmanship. Of course, such written protests are in keeping with their beliefs. You never know who is truly behind such fellows. One thing is certain, however, the confusion they create is welcomed by the enemies of our people, who look upon it most favorably. Their attitude provides a criminal level of help in the weakening of our people, and it removes from within our people the desire for the one and only possession that can provide the necessities of life. No people on the earth hold even one square meter of territory and soil as the result of any heavenly wish or higher right. The frontiers of Germany were laid down by chance, and they are only temporary during the current political struggle. Likewise, so are the frontiers of other nations. A thoughtless fool may believe that the earth's surface is unchangeable like granite, but it actually represents only a pause in a slow development involving constant change, which affects the people living along the boundaries of these lands. Perhaps by tomorrow it may even be destroyed or changed again by the greater forces of nature. State frontiers are made by men and changed by men. The fact that a nation successfully gains an immense territory does not establish a holy right to keep it for eternity. Gaining this territory only proves the might of the conquerors and the weakness of those who tolerate them. This strength alone establishes the right to keep the territory. The German people are crowded on an impossibly small territory today and facing a pitiful future. However, this situation has not been decreed by fate, and to revolt against it is not an insult to fate. A higher power has not granted more territory to some other nation instead of Germany, just as no higher power is offended by such an unjust distribution of territory. Our ancestors did not receive the land we live on as a present from heaven, but they had to risk their lives and fight for it. In the future, we will not obtain the land and the life it offers for our nation through any act of heavenly generosity. We will only obtain the land we need through the might of the victorious sword. We all recognize that a confrontation with France is necessary. However, it would be pointless if this were the limit of our foreign policy. The only sensible foreign policy is one that expands our people's living space in Europe. Acquiring colonies is not a solution to this problem. We must gain settlement territory to enlarge the mother country itself. This will keep new settlers in close communication with the land of their origin and also guarantee the entire nation experiences the advantages that only come from a large and united territory. The race-based nationalist movement must not defend the rights of other nations, but act as the spearhead of its own people's rights. If it does not do that, then it serves no useful purpose. It is not entitled to gripe about the past, because it would be repeating the past. The former German policy mistakenly followed interests of the royal dynasty. However, the future should not be guided by such commonplace, sickening sentimentalism. Specifically, we should not act as policemen for the well-known poor small nations, but instead we should act as soldiers guarding the interest of our own people. However, we National Socialists must go even further. The right to possess territory and soil can turn into a duty if we see a great nation which suddenly appears doomed if it does not acquire more territory. This is especially true when we are not talking about just any little Negro tribe, but about the Germanic mother of all life and the cultural image of the world. Germany will either be a world power or cease to exist. In order to become a world power, she needs the vastness that will give her the importance needed today and provide life to her citizens. So we National Socialists must scratch out the foreign policy practices of the pre-war period. We will begin our work where it was left off 600 years ago. We will stop the eternal Germanic migration to the south and west of Europe we have seen in the past and look toward the land in the east. We will finally end the colonial and trade policy of pre-war times and move forward into the land policy of the future. However, when we say territory and soil today in Europe, we can only think about Russia and the border states under her control. Here, fate seems to have given us a clue. By surrendering Russia to Bolshevism, it deprived the Russian people of that intelligent group responsible for creating the state and which guaranteed their existence as a state up to that time. The Russian state did not result from the political abilities of the Slavic race in Russia, but its creation was a wonderful example of the state-forming ability possessed by the Germanic element that still exists within an inferior race. Numerous powerful empires on the earth have been created this same way when inferior races, led by Germanic organizers and masters, have grown into huge states, and they continue to exist as long as the racial nucleus of the state-forming race survived. For centuries, Russia has fed on this Germanic nucleus of her leading upper classes. Today, that group could be exterminated because it has been almost entirely wiped out. The Jew has stepped into their place. It is equally impossible for the Russians to rid themselves of the Jewish yoke of bondage using their own strength, as it is impossible for the Jew to maintain the huge empire in the long run. The Jew is not an organizer, but an enzyme of decomposition. The gigantic empire in the East is ripe for collapse. The end of Jewish domination in Russia will also be the end of the Russian state. We have been selected by fate to witness the catastrophe, and it will be the strongest confirmation that the national race theory is true and correct.
tuned in to Radio Aryan.